Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano. Raw. Sourced. Fresh. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, built by High Caliber Millwrights. This is The Bald-Faced Truth.
One of my favorite guests, John Wilner, Pac-12 Hotline, San Jose Mercury News, Bay Area News Group, friend of the show, always, he's on point. That's what Wilner is. He's on point with all things. Wilner, where are you today?
I am at home today, not at a campus, not at a practice.
Let me ask you, because you're in the Bay Area. The A's fans are all mad at me. They're sending me tweets like, go bleep yourself, because I suggested that the A's would have drawn more last night in Portland than they did in Oakland.
I saw that.
I don't blame the fans in Oakland. Like, you know, the product's not great over the years. The stadium's not a great place to go. Like, who do you blame for what's gone on in Oakland?
Ownership. I mean, that's the only place to point. You know, they have consistently traded their best young players away because they don't want to spend the money for a big payroll. And so, the fans are tired of it. They don't think the ownership is committed to winning, and then you add the fact that the stadium is not good, and fans just they've lost interest, or they care, but they care from afar.
We're talking to John Wilner, Bay Area News Group, San Jose Mercury News, Pac-12 Hotline. Let's get to the football stuff. Because I think that you're right about the A's, and I think the television ratings will be great for this series with the Mariners. I just don't think people are going to go to the ballpark.
Were you an A's fan growing up?
Giants.
Giants.
Yeah, I went as often as I could, but it wasn't like I was a season ticket holder. But now, right. I think in Portland it would, because of, you know, there just isn't as much going on in Portland. I think people would really embrace another team and something else to do. And, you know,
yep.
I just don't know. I'd feel bad for Oakland. There's a lot of history there.
Yeah, no, I do too. And it would be a good, you know, the schedule would work opposite of the Blazers, right? Because the first round ends in late May or late April.
And that's when the Blazers are always done. All right, Wilner, let's get to the Pac-12. The Ducks... A lot of people up here are quietly going, you know what? They could win 9. They could be a little surprised. Everybody overlooks Stanford and David Shaw. Why do people always look past David Shaw and all he does is kick people's butt?
Well, you know, it's almost just in that regard, they're kind of a victim of their consistency and so steady. You know, there's not a lot of – they're not flashy. For the most part, they're not making news off the field. They just kind of go about their business every fall and win games. And yet they haven't, you know, they never made the BCS championship, came close, haven't made the playoffs. So they're at this really high level of performance and consistency, but they're not quite elite and they're not terrible. And they don't really give you a reason to hate them for a lot of fans. So I think that they're just, they've been so good, it's almost like you don't even notice.
Does he get enough credit? Or because I know what Stanford was like for a stretch when, you know, before Jim Harbaugh, before David Shaw, it was tougher sledding.
Yeah, they were atrocious for a long time. You know what happened really is, and if I were listing the people responsible for the turnaround, number one would be Bob Bowlesby, the old athletic director who hired Harbaugh, and Harbaugh brought Shaw with him. It's an institutional decision. Stanford is good at everything else, right? Really elite at everything else. every other sport pretty much, and certainly all academic and cultural fields. And they finally decided they wanted to be good in football. Just like decades ago, Duke decided they wanted to be good at football. So you've got a small private school with unlimited money and an incredible academic reputation to use for recruiting. And they decided they wanted to be good, and they would spend the money to do it. And that's what it took. Of course, this came after a one-win season when they bottomed out, and a lot of their donors were upset, and the administration kind of changed its whole view and decided that, you know, you could be good in football without it defeating everything else because it's such a monster. And then they got to that Orange Bowl, and they liked it. And so they've committed to football ever since.
John Wilner with us. The AP poll will come out 6 days from now. Your ballot that you posted, and I will tweet out, you've got Alabama, Clemson, and you got a surprise there at number three. A lot of people expect Washington. Hey, you're the Pac-12 guy. You put Wisconsin there.
I did, and a lot of that's, you know, because of the schedule. Well, first of all, Wisconsin's got a veteran quarterback, one of the best tailbacks in the country. You know, their offensive line, which is always good, they got five starters back, and they play in a weaker division in the Big Ten, and they don't play Ohio State, and they don't play a real high-level non-conference game. I think that they are poised to be the Big Ten representative in the playoff this year, or the top contender. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen at Ohio State, but you know, if Urban Meyer's not on the sidelines, to me, Wisconsin is the clear favorite. So I went, you know, I take schedules into account, and these days the cross division schedules in every conference are really important. You know, Oregon does not play SC. Washington doesn't play SC. Ohio State and Wisconsin don't play. Miami and Clemson don't play. Alabama and Georgia don't play. And that's crucial.
Do you feel like you have Washington at 7 on your ballot?
Yep.
Are you picking, like, this is where they'll start, or are you saying this is where you think they'll finish at the end of the year?
Where I think they're going to finish. I don't have much interest in picking, like, how good are the teams now. I just figure, you know, if your number one team, in theory, should be the team you think is going to win the national title. So I kind of go from there. Well, number two and number three and so on should all be based on how it's going to shake out in January. You know, I think the Huskies are going to win the conference, but I don't know that they're quite going to make the playoff. So I kind of settled them right there in the next tier.
Now, you have a sleeper pick at number 9, the Oregon Ducks. People are loving you here.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, the one thing that I've figured out over the years doing the AP poll is you have to pick sleepers, right? Because it's not going to play out exactly as we think. There's always going to be teams that come out of nowhere. I mean, right, Central Florida didn't even get a vote in the preseason poll last year, and they finished undefeated. Whereas Florida State was, what, number 3 or something? And what were they, like 6-6, 7-6,
yeah,
something like that? So, you know, you have to account for the unexpected. So, to me, it becomes comes down to, all right, what 4 or 5 teams out there have, you know, the foundation to be an upside surprise? And certainly if you've got an elite quarterback and you've got a favorable schedule and you've got, what, 4 returning starters on the offensive line and a good defense, that's a pretty good model right there for a sleeper pick. And that's, you know, that's what I saw with Oregon.
It's really interesting because you're going to get people who say, oh, you're the Pac-12 guy, but you really have Washington at 7. What kind of feedback are you getting having Oregon as high as 9?
Well, I'm getting a lot of feedback from the Washington fans. As you can expect, who think I'm crazy. Of course, you know, the Oregon fans hate seeing Washington above them. So that's the basics. It comes down to a lot of people think Oregon should be ranked, but that 9 is too high. That somewhere in the maybe 15 to 20 range would be a better spot for the Ducks. And you know what? That could end up being right. I just think, you know, they got a chance to win 10 or 11 games, in my opinion, based off partly on that schedule. And, I mean, they're picking – they get Washington at a great time, right? They're getting Stanford at a good time, too. And those are the two key games. So I think they've got a good chance to win both.
You raise a point that we've been kicking around all week. It's – you know, Oregon's schedule, they're going to get knocked for it. They've got Bowling Green and Portland State and San Jose State in the non-conference. And on one hand, if you are just gaming this system, and I put you in an athletic department, do you schedule soft, hoping, hey, if I run the table or maybe have one loss in conference, I'm going to look pretty good on paper? Or do you like playing games? Not from a fan standpoint, but if I put you in the athletic department, are you scheduling Ohio State in a non-conference game, or are you happy to play Bowling Green?
No, I'm scheduling one A-level game. And, you know, I actually spoke to Rob Mullins about this in April, and their model is pretty much the ABC, right? One A-level game against a Power 5, an established Power 5 school. Then they want a good regional team at home, and then they want basically a cupcake. And they had that set up for this year until A&M backed out because of switching conferences. So then the Ducks all of a sudden are scrambling to find somebody. And, you know, a year or two out is way, way too short a time frame to be able to find, you know, an equivalent of Texas A&M. So they're stuck with what they had. Same thing happened to Washington when two years ago when they were getting bashed for their schedule while they were trying to make the playoff. And it's because of, somebody had backed out of a game. And the selection committee is going to know that. And, you know, obviously Mullins is chair of the committee, but the committee can't evaluate teams based on intent. They have to evaluate teams based on who you played. And if there's a scenario in which Oregon, you know, does have an excellent year and is in that conversation, but ultimately the schedule kind of undermines their case, and it's not their fault. A&M backed out, and there was nothing they could do.
Yeah, that's out of their hands. They add Boise State. They add Michigan State to 2029. I probably won't be hosting this show by the time that goes on, but you tweeted out that offensive coordinator. Who was the offensive coordinator?
Oh, Marcus Mariota. That'll be his first year. Marcus Mariota, offensive coordinator. After a nice, productive, what would that be, like a 12-year run in the NFL, he settles in as an offensive coordinator. You know, more than a few former high-level college quarterbacks have become good offensive coordinators for the Ducks. One of them is currently coaching in Nebraska. So, I was kind of being facetious there, obviously,
yeah.
But it's a long way out. The thing about it being a long way out is it's in the scheduling game, it's not actually that far because Oregon has got one slot a year for a game of that magnitude, and they have to find an opponent that has the right home road rotation. The Ducks want to play non-conference road games against Power 5 teams on odd years. So they always want to have seven home games. So they got to slot their opponent, the Michigan States of the world, in. They got to slot them in to the right odd even year for home and road. And it's much more complicated than people think. But they need to have, you know, they always want to have seven home games. So they got to make it work based on where the Civil War is and based on the options they have out with other teams.
All right, you've got your poll. I'm going to tweet a link to it so people can see how you see the preseason AP poll. You got Alabama at 1, Clemson at 2, Wisconsin at 3. Oregon is one of your sleeper picks. Who's your other one of your other sleeper picks?
I got Florida. I think Dan Mullen, who former Florida offensive coordinator under Urban Meyer, has been at Mississippi State. Now he's back in Gainesville. I think he's going to get them turned around very quickly. I have Arizona at, I think it's 24. Now, I don't know. Some people might think that's a sleeper. I'm not sure. I don't. You know, it kind of depends on how you define a sleeper. But I think the Wildcats have got a chance to to win the South if USC stumbles a little bit.
John Wilner, appreciate you, man. Thank you.
As always, thank you.
There he is.
Good talking.
You too. San Jose Mercury News, Bay Area News Group. He's got the Ducks number 9. Are you buying or selling what Wilner just brought to you? Tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. Leave it here. Punch it audio in front of us.
Crank up the hits. We're rocking your eardrums with the best Oregon college football coverage this fall on 102.9 and 750 The Game. Presented by Frost Brewed Coors Light.
A's fans are just profane on Twitter. What are you mad at me for? Show up to the games. Demand more of ownership. I always love that. They get mad at me. For those of you who are excited about hearing a little more baseball talk, Jim Joyce, former Major League umpire, will be joining us at 2 o'clock. That is half an hour from now or so. Whether you're listening on Fox Sports Eugene, K-O-R-E, shout out to the crew in Eugene and all the listeners in Springfield and Eugene and the surrounding area on 95.7 FM. Thank you to you guys. Klamath Falls, 93.3, the FM ESPN affiliate there. Thank you to the people in Klamath Falls who listen to the program. Diehards there. Klamath Falls gets this show and... It's a surprise to me because somebody asked me the other day how the radio show has affected me, and I didn't know what they meant by it, but the conversation, I said, well, what do you mean by that? And he says, well, with the sports column that you had before, it was like people could just read what you thought, and that was it. That was all they knew of you. Now they're getting to hear you, humanizes you a little bit. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? Humanizes me. And he said, well, and this was a listener who listens in Eugene. And he says, well, like before in Eugene, it was just you like kind of saying, you know, Mike Bellotti made a mistake or Chip Kelly needs to handle discipline better and you'd write the column. Now they can tune in and they're hearing about you as a dad. I'm like, yeah, that's like me when I'm at Starbucks like this morning. I got kicked in the head this morning 4 times. 4 times. 4-year-old and 2-year-old who were climbing all over the thing. Like, you know how they have their tennis shoes on? They're climbing over the chairs, like the nice chairs at Starbucks. The people there are probably happy to see us go. And I'm sitting there, and I literally got, like, you know, foot in the face, foot in the forehead, foot in the jaw. And I looked over at my wife, and she was like, you look annoyed. And I was like, I've been kicked in the head 4 times in the last 5 minutes. But I look at her, and I'm like... You know, you should totally go to yoga today. Like, go take them, put them in the kids thing, and you're going to need it because there's just certain days when you have kids. And then so the guy I was talking with yesterday, he was like, that really humanizes you when people can know that you're a regular person. And I said, I guess that's okay. But what I like about it is I get it's another way to connect with people on this show. Like, Bobby, I never would have met you if I had done this, not done this show. Like, would we have crossed paths?
No, never. Never would have crossed paths. You know, outside of the studio, I get that a lot about the fact that there was quite a few people that just read your, you know, the older crowd just read your articles and started listening to you and you were a different person and humanized might not be, but just different. Yeah. What they read and what, and even on the radio is two not completely different, but two different people.
But yeah, you get like when you're reading me. You're just getting an opinion in like 800 to 1800 words. And I kind of got to stay on point. When you're tuning into the show, you're getting to know each other. Like, I feel like I get to know the listeners too when they call in, like the frequent callers who call in. Good and bad, I feel like I get to know them. Like, there was a guy yesterday on Twitter. Twitter's a bad thing. There was a guy in Portugal. Twitter's awful. Because Twitter is the exact opposite of that. Because you have like a very limited space. You don't really get to know intent. There's a lot lost in translation. A lot of people take themselves too seriously there. So a guy had tweeted out a video of a guy in Portugal who was surfing. Did you see this video?
Oh, I did see that. Yes, I did.
Huge wave.
Yeah.
Like.
Record.
Yep. Unbelievable wave.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, and I worked in Santa Cruz, California for a time where the surfers are. They used to go to a place called Mavericks where they would surf waves that were somewhat like that. And you'd have to be towed out by a guy on a jet ski.
Yep.
He tows you out because you can't paddle out there.
Go to North Shore, too, and down in Hawaii, the same way. Yeah. You got to get towed out.
They tow you out there, which sounds like that's cool. I'd like somebody to tow me out. Tow you out there, and then they try to surf them, and then they film it. And the guy's just a little speck on this huge wave, okay? And what struck me in watching the video, and I retweeted it, is I said, hey, I'm not worried about the surfer. What about all those people that are on the cliff? Because the wave looked so big that it was going to come in and just wipe them off, everybody off the cliff. I said, I'm worried about those people on the cliff who don't know there's a tsunami coming. And one of the guys who follows me just came at me like, how could you not know that that's not a tsunami? You're a journalist. You're representing Oregon. All of that. And I said, man, you need to lighten up. It's just Monday.
It's just Monday.
Like, and then he called me a name. You know, he was like, you know, you're a bleep. And so I almost blocked him. And then I said, no, I'm going to give him a chance. So I tweeted back at him. I said, listen, either you didn't get the joke or I was bad at delivering it. That's a big wave. And then he came back nice.
Yeah. One thing I do like about Twitter, better than back in the day when we have the text in, you text.
Yeah.
When nobody else could see what somebody, you know, texts, so it was right. An individual, and you and I and several people got to read some of these texts, and I've seen, they were beyond terrible.
And there's a person put their phone number there.
Yeah.
With the text.
And now, at least with Twitter, you have the world that gets to see it, so that, you know, still there's a lot of people that aren't filtered, but I don't think people realize just how hateful and absolutely despicable things that were said. It's unbelievable what people feel like when they've got a buffer zone between you.
Well,
and
the comment section of my columns is pretty funny.
Yeah.
It's pretty entertaining, and I find that it's really interesting. Like, there are a couple people that just, like, they're always in there commenting. They're always like the first people. It's very anonymous. So by being anonymous, at least in theory, it's anonymous. It's not really anonymous. I must tell you that, you know, you're posting on Oregon Live, your IP address is there, okay? You're identifiable to the point where if they want to block you, they can just block you, no matter what name you post under. So several people have been blocked and then have, like, gone to creative measures to, like, maybe they go to a Kinko's or something and open an account or whatever. That's fine if you want to work that hard. But I just find it's really interesting, like people will work really hard to be so negative. Like, the minute I post something, they must have a Google alert set up. They're always the first person to post. And they're always like, they're never on point. And I'm like, man, you're like, I appreciate that you read, but if it bothers you that much, I can, you know, should we block you to make your life better? Or, you know, I don't understand it.
Easy way. I said this from day one. Easy. It's easy way out. Let's be negative. There's a lot of hate, a lot of negativity in the world, and I'm just going to go there right from the get-go.
I struggle, though, with the idea that, okay, I have a job that requires me to be critical, but is there a difference between critical and negative?
Absolutely.
What's the difference?
Well, I think critical is pointing out differences that people can improve on. Being negative is putting something down to the point where there's no improvement. You don't want somebody to improve, especially when you get to people that are just being negative, what I call just being negative to be negative. When you're not when you're trying to look at a bright spot or at least look at some hope, a ray of hope. I talk about the football, right? We talk about the Beavers. You know, we have the football programming coming up next month. And talk about the Beavers. And I'm like, you know, the easy way out is to constantly be negative because that's always going to be there. It's always going to be there with those guys. Yeah. I'm going to try not to do that. I'm really going to try and see some positive, not reach, but some positive hope. I'm a glass half full kind of guy. And I just think it's easy to look at things in a negative light all the time.
I feel like human nature is mostly optimistic, or else why
Why else would we all get out of bed? Like, you know what I mean? That's an optimistic action.
I think a lot of people are negative. I also think a lot of people are negative. The people that are negative out there, I think they're negative because they're not happy. They're unhappy, and they're like, if I'm going to be unhappy, you're going to be unhappy.
They're trying to make everybody unhappy.
Yeah. It's like
Alabama Adriana, you are a millennial down there. Snapchat, Instagram. You see people happy or you see people kind of miserable with their own lives and their existence?
On Instagram, I see a lot of happy people because I feel like they're trying to portray something to other people that may not be true.
Is it real happiness or is it like, I'm happy, but I'm not?
No, I don't know. It might be a little bit of both. I think they're trying to put up a front for people to think a certain type of way. But I think when it comes to critique, you have to have some sort of background in that field to be able to critique someone and not just be negative.
Like Simon on American Idol. When he says, that's dreadful. I rather enjoy his opinion. But I go, that's a guy who's worked in the industry. He knows. He knows what's good. I don't know. What about on Snapchat? Is it all?
Snapchat is just like your daily life. It's pretty funny for the most part.
Snapchat's useless. What's the purpose of Snapchat? Give me, like, is it?
I've said it before. It's kind of like texting, but with pictures, and it's quicker than texting. It's quicker than calling. It's just kind of there. You can follow celebrities on there. You can follow funny accounts. So I don't know.
What could be quicker than texting? You know what I mean? We used to send faxes.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll fax you over that document.
Do you know how to use a fax machine?
Yeah.
You do?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
When's the last time you mailed a letter?
A couple days ago.
You wrote a letter and mailed it.
I didn't. Well, I wrote on it. It was like a form.
I had a friend that had never mailed a letter and he was in college. He didn't know when you went down to the mailbox. He didn't know what to do. Like, he knew how to write a letter. He knew how to put a stamp on it and address it. He walked down to the mailbox and he was baffled because it was one of those neighborhood mailboxes that had the one slot for the outgoing mail. Yeah. He was looking at the mailbox and he was baffled on where to put the letter. So he opened his, like, our address mailbox and he put it in. And then I went down to get the mail and I said, hey, man, your letter was sitting in our mailbox. That's not where it goes. And he goes, I've never mailed a letter before. I wonder if we're going to have a generation of people who are like, what's that machine over there that paper keeps coming out of?
I think we probably will, but then there's also something so special about getting mail and giving mail and receiving mail. I really hope that doesn't go out of style.
There's an excitement about it.
Yeah.
There's a surprise in the mailbox. Unless
I don't like mail.
Yeah, because you're an adult. Yeah,
exactly.
You're an adult.
Yeah,
that's why.
If there's no mail, it's a good day.
My dad used to hate the mail. He's like, there's just bills in there.
That's right.
That's it. It's not like people are sending us a bunch of money in the mail. They want bills. All right. Leave it here. Punch It Audio is coming up. Jim Joyce, Major League Baseball umpire. He will tell us whether or not baseball will work in Portland. He's been to every Major League city. Is Portland a Major League city? That's coming up.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.